The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
All right, we're back here for another episode of the Midwest Swing Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Cold Omaha and Zone Coverage can be found on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And producing off-site, or maybe he's on-site and I'm off-site, is Tom Schreier at TSchreier3, the co-founder of Cold Omaha and Zone Coverage. Tom, what's going on your Friday?
Oh, not too much. I'm enjoying the 90-degree weather, and I think I've kind of recovered from covering. By the way, I just want the people to know, I covered both doubleheaders and both super long games. I don't know how this happens, Brandon, where you're just dying in trouble left and right.
I covered a 16-inning game in Baltimore, which is always bad, and there was about a 45-minute delay in the game because a bee flew into Butch Weiniger's ear. And Earl Weaver wound up playing the game under protest because he said the Twins were obligated to, at some point, I don't know if he specified when, to replace Weiniger. But for some reason, the umpires allowed a lot of leeway there, and eventually someone came up with the idea to drown the bee. It's kind of like draining the swamp. In this case, it was drowning the bee. Both of them pretty apt metaphors, but anyway... That's one of my favorite stories about games that just don't end. So I can empathize.
Well, before we get into today's show, I'm having my Jordan's flu game of podcast. Woke up not feeling that great today. So if I have an off game, I'll just blame it on that. But the voice that you heard, you might be familiar with from listening to KQ, listening to the BS show, or just reading some of our stuff from Zone Coverage and Cold Omaha. It's Mike Gelfand joining Midwest Swing for the first time. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and it's an honor to be here with a couple of the keener millennial baseball minds that I've known.
Thank you.
Well, and I know, Mike, you're a creature of habit, perhaps even strange habits, if what Tom says is accurate. But I know your sleep schedule is a little atypical. How do you like these West Coast games that start at 9 and end sometime after the witching hour of midnight?
Well, for those of us who suffer from delayed sleep phase syndrome, which is my sleep disability, they're fantastic. I mean, you know, having a sleep disability is a bummer, but it did allow me to become what I considered to be the nation's leading authority on Gonzaga's basketball team.
It's true.
I never miss a Gonzaga basketball game, just like I never miss a good West Coast game. No, I'm just starting to wake up at about the fifth inning on the West Coast.
So you're a big Vin Scully fan from the last few years, well, the last many years, but I know that was a big thing on Twitter, was people would stay up to watch Vin Scully call Dodgers games, and it certainly didn't hurt that the Dodgers have been pretty good in the last few years.
And the Cards find another ace from their deck. To me, that got really old, I have to say. And I understand I'm considered a curmudgeon, but as far as I'm concerned, Vin Scully had a great voice. He had a great bit. He was erudite as hell, very smart man, and I appreciated that. But, you know, at some point, the act wears a little thin. That's all I'm saying. That's all I got to say.
Did you stay up for last night's game?
Did I stay up? I got up for last.
Oh, well, yeah.
I watched most of the game. Yeah, yeah. It was, the Twins had some very, very bad luck. Things really just, it was one of those perfect storm things with the Houston series. And of course, Houston's the best team probably in baseball. So you can sort of see it coming. But last night, the Twins got it all back. They had every break a team can have in one game.
Well, the dropped pop-up in the ninth inning, and to me it was funny that just after midnight, to bring us to Friday here local time, we had a Freaky Friday where someone else's bullpen flipped the switch and did back to the Twins what the Twins had spent the entire Astros series doing, was blowing a lead and losing in probably one of the more painful ways you can imagine.
So supposedly Norris wasn't quite at the top of his game. And, of course, then again you had the drop pop-up, which was certainly influenced somewhat by the runner kind of getting inside the head of the first baseman. And you could argue. I mean, I really thought the Angels would make an argument there that there was an interference in that play, but they didn't. So I guess there wasn't. I know Dick Bremer, who of course is a leading expert on everything about baseball, said
just
that,
ask him.
Said that there couldn't have been any interference because of the fact that the base runner didn't touch the first baseman. So you know that's quite an insight there. Dick Bremer just made up a new rule. What an idiot. Dick Bremer, for those of you who don't know, is number one on my list of people I don't want to have a beer with. And by the way, I'm not going to give away the whole list, but I will tell you. Number two, Jimmy Buffett.
This is, Brandon, this is going to be a column on Zone Coverage, I swear.
We need to put this behind a paywall because, man, that's going to be. But hey, maybe it's like an error with official scores these days where you can't have an error unless you touch the ball.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. If you think you can't make the play, you just back up, let the ball play
sure.
you, and sure. no harm, no foul.
Yeah, it's another new rule. Yeah, and that one, of course, you never know what an official score will do anyway, except that probably they won't give an error to the home team. But and then the other thing, of course, I mean the biggest single thing. Well, you got to throw in the triple play too, because the triple plays
yeah.
never happen without a lot of good fortune. But you know, and then of course, you know, I mean, there how many Hall of Fame players are there in the league? So when one of them can't play, that's kind of a big factor.
Yeah, not being able to see Mike Trout is pretty disappointing. Obviously,
yeah.
they got the pursuit of Albert Pujols' 600th
yeah.
career home run, Rod Carew in the booth. In fact, in the booth while that triple play was turned.
Yeah.
Lots of fun stuff going on, you know, and again, for a night owl like me, it's fun to stay up. I'm already doing other work at that time of day anyhow. So,
yeah.
you know, if you're going to be up, you might as well enjoy the game without having
yeah.
to DVR it and have it spoiled by Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I feel the same way. I'm always doing some work at that hour, but how can you not? It's just like you know, watching the scene of a bad accident. You just can't turn away.
Well, to get down to brass tacks for why we had you on here in the first place, besides the fact that you're, you know, obviously madly talented and a boon to our guest list.
Oh,
we do want to talk about Paul Molitor and what he's, you know, what he obviously potential lame duck manager
yeah.
with, you know, Ron Gardenhire never had to manage in the final year without a contract in hand for the next season. So
yeah.
that's kind of uncharted territory for a Twins manager now for the last like 30 some odd years. What has been your grading of him so far? Because I've gotten some people telling me I'm not critical enough of him and all that, which is funny because every single time he bunts, I basically tweet a Michael Jordan gif saying, stop it, get some help.
Yeah.
Which
well,
apparently somehow I'm not critical enough, maybe because I don't rip him unmercifully. But I just I think he's been kind of up and down this year.
Yeah, I think so, too. I last year I was especially critical of him. Because here he had this horrible pitching staff, which as the season went on had simply imploded, just like the one now is seemingly about to do, or maybe is already done. And he'd keep playing for like, you know, one run in the first inning, and it drove me crazy.
Yeah.
But I don't see him doing that nearly. I don't even see him doing it this year. Yeah, he bunts when I don't think he should, but I don't think it's as egregious as it was last year. So I'm inclined to say that he's managing a little better, and I hate to say it, but, you know, this hurts me to say. This might be an area where the analytics have helped him to understand the fallacy of this bunting in the first inning thing.
Well, and how much does it help of a, you know, when you look at process versus results, the fact that the team is playing better, that maybe we view him in a more positive light as well?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the offense has some bangers in Kenny Vargas when he was up, Miguel Sano, even Robbie Grossman at times has put the ball in the seats and has looked better than
yeah.
any point in his career. Do you think we can get tied up a little bit in the fact that the team looks better, that maybe we're willing to overlook these shortcomings when, in fact, last year at this point they probably had something like 20 more losses than they do now?
Oh, without question. And you get into that whole cause and effect thing, and the analytics really, in my opinion at least, some people would disagree, they haven't come to the point where they can really fill in all those gaps there. But here's the way I look at the Molitor thing. He's basically, you mentioned he's a lame duck manager, but he's not the guy who runs the team anymore. And the Twins front office has really made it very clear. This is not Molitor's team. This is the front office's team, for better or worse. More specifically, the team is run by analytics. Look, it wasn't Molitor's team when the Twins started out 5-1. By that time, Failvey was saying, I'm sorry for that pronunciation, was saying, hey, the analytics are paying dividends. In other words, Failvey was saying, yeah, I did this. Molitor didn't do this. All right, now the team goes into the toilet. So I guess the front office has to take the credit or blame for that. You know, it reminds me of the old story about when Bugsy Siegel was bumped off. You remember Bugsy Siegel, right? You saw the movie Bugsy?
I can't say that I have, but I'll take your word for it.
Bugsy was one of the great mobsters in the history of our great mobster-driven country. And Bugsy's inspiration was the Flamingo Hotel, which really started the whole Vegas thing going. Anyway, when Bugsy got bumped off back in 1947, Minneapolis's own Davey Berman, who was our local mobster, went out to Vegas. Anyway, Davey strolled through the lobby of the Flamingo and shouted, "I'm in charge now." All right? So Failvey has essentially said, "I'm in charge now." Maybe we're in charge now. So it's not Molitor's team. So, therefore, how can you criticize Molitor when it's not his team?
Well, if you were a betting man, and who am I kidding? Of course you're a betting man.
Of course I am.
how does this affect his chances of sticking with the team? Because I suppose to some extent, if he's willingly allowing them to pull some of the strings from their perch or wherever they are at Target Field on any given game, that maybe does make them more amenable to keeping him. But at the same time, I don't know that two guys from completely different organizations take over a team without having men in mind with who they might like to put in charge of a team, whether it's Sandy Alomar Jr. or Ron Washington. You can name names that have had prominent roles in either of the organizations that Derek Falvey and Thad Levine have come from that might look good wearing a, oddly enough, a Twins uniform. I don't know why baseball managers have to wear the uniform. No other team sport requires that. Imagine Phil Jackson wearing shorts and a tank top. No, but I digress.
Well, I think a lot of women have imagined that.
Do you get the sense, though, that Molitor is working his way toward a new contract or away from a new contract, or is he treading water? What do you feel like right now as we head into the month of June with still lots of baseball left?
I mean, it's anyone's guess, but if this guys believe it's their team, they probably want their manager, right?
I feel like that's true.
Yeah, so I think Molitor's under pressure. This team's going to have to do really well, and I'm not sure this team is capable of doing that well. They've kind of led a charmed life, but you know, as I said, you know, and you can see it. Once the bullpen starts to collapse, once they start running that shuttle between here and Rochester, things rarely get much better. So I don't know. I read your piece the other day about you did the power rankings, and I have no argument with any of your power rankings. But you know, your number two position player, as I recall, was Max Kepler, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brian Dozier, Kepler,
Max
Kepler, I think.
Right now,
or Miguel Sano,
Max
Kepler.
Best slugging percentage in the major leagues. If your second best offensive player has the 90th best slugging percentage, what kind of chance do you have?
Yeah, I mean, that's true, and that's a point well taken. I do have to ask, though, I mean, what do you think has been Molitor's biggest shortcoming as a manager? Because, again, if we're being accused of not being critical enough, I think we're all aware of the things he's done well and not done well.
Yeah.
And do you get a Ted Williams vibe from him as a manager? Because sometimes, you know, Ted Williams, one of the, if not the greatest hitters of all time, is also one of the worst managers of all time. Now, the record doesn't necessarily reflect that for Paul Molitor.
No.
But it is difficult for all-world talented people to do instruction, similar to you instructing us on writing because of your gifts as a writer, I'm sure. But what do you think is his biggest shortcoming as a manager?
But that's okay. No, I totally agree. I wrote a piece a while back talking about that same phenomenon and throwing in a few misleading numbers that just supported what I was saying. But Ted Williams was the classic example. Terrible manager, great player, and I think that and Frank Robinson was another example I used, but he was just kind of an unhappy, nasty, bitter, cynical guy who nobody was ever going to be really inspired to play for. But these guys, I think there's a tendency for them to just simply not understand why players aren't as good as they are. And so Molitor, I think it's a little unfair of Molitor. The biggest problem I had with Molitor last year, well, first, and you covered it, was, you know, and I guess I haven't even noticed it so much this year because it's not as bad, but as you said, this fetish with bunting. So that's one thing I definitely thought. The other thing I thought about Molitor last year was just that the optics were bad. I mean, he looked so miserable, and you kind of had to wonder, why is he putting himself through this stuff, you know, when he is so miserable. Part of it, I just think, is that he's a guy who looks a little older than he is. He has that kind of sallow complexion, you know, mm-hmm. sort of almost a Steve Bannon look. Yeah, except Molitor does look like he's at least alive, and so I think that was part of it. I think he's coming along. There has to be a learning curve. The hell with the fact he was a Hall of Famer as a manager. There has to be a learning curve.
Yeah, well, he didn't manage at any level before this either. I mean, he was the hitting coach, I believe, in 2004 for the Mariners, and then he was a roving instructor for the Twins, and so there is a learning curve. And I think your point is well taken, and you have to think about this. I mean, why does the guy put himself through this? He's 60 years old.
Yeah.
He's got two young children at home. He probably made $30 million playing baseball. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's got the hometown whatever, and, you know, still in fairly good shape. I think, you know, in some ways he looked miserable last year, like he was pulling his hair out. But I do think, you know, he's a fairly healthy man for 60 years old, considering everything he's put his body through physically and maybe other things.
Yeah.
I was reading about that today as well. But I think it is a little bit, it speaks to his passion for the game that he wants to still do this. And it's going to be interesting to see how this situation is handled, because I do think it is delicate, these new hotshot guys coming in. You do have a guy who obviously didn't spend his entire career in Minnesota, but has very, very strong ties to the area. And so it's, you know, they're definitely not pulling the Band-Aid off for some of these fixes for these situations.
Right.
I did want to ask you, I wrote in January that this team was going to win 80 ball games. The pace they're on right now, probably not terribly far from 84, 85. What do you think if you, again, as a betting man, if Vegas was to give you that 80 win, or let's say 79.5, win total, are you taking the over or under at this point? And if so, did I hit the nail on the head long before anybody else was putting numbers out there?
Well, of course, I'm a Minnesotan, and you know, the only other city I've lived in, Chicago, where people were even less optimistic about their teams. Here at least people will accept mediocrity, you know, they actually crave it. In Chicago, they just laugh about it because they don't even consider mediocrity until, of course, the Cubs finally won it. But the history of sports in Chicago is people just expect the worst. They generally get it, and they laugh about it, and they go on from there. So maybe that kind of taints my thinking a little bit. But I think the Twins are an under team. Look at how they rank statistically. What are they now? Like they have what, the 24th best, or maybe you could say the eighth from the worst, the sixth from the worst pitching staff. They're ranked about what, 21st or so in hitting. I already talked about Kepler as being the 90th best slugging, having the 90th best slugging percentage in baseball. It doesn't look like they're that good to me. So, and I'm just crunching the numbers. You know, when the Twins were 5-1, three of the wins came against Kansas City, which is the worst team. Is they the worst team in baseball? No, just the American League, right?
Well, they're in the thick of it for that. Yeah, I know there's some teams in the National League. obviously underperforming as well, but they're definitely in the thick of it.
The Twins picked it up.
So.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say the Twins are either in the best possible or the worst possible division, depending how you look at it.
Sure.
So that certainly could be the saving grace.
So just for perspective here, Royals have 22 wins, 22 and 30. So that is the worst in the American League, although the Athletics have 23. However, if you go into the NL East, it's like the Mets have 23. The Mets also had their – did you see this? Their mascot or whatever flipped off some guy.
Always a bad sign.
It's a sad state of affairs when Mr. Met is going to get fired before Terry Collins.
Right. And then the Braves, Marlins, and Phillies are all actually worse, 22, 21, 17.
Oh, yeah, the Phillies are kind of in classic Philly territory, aren't they?
Right, and Giants and Padres, too, are at 22.
Yeah.
So they're a little more unbalanced there in the NL.
Well, so the latest power rankings that came out had, I believe it was the the Nationals at number 3, and then the other 4 teams in the division were like 23, 27, 28, 29,
yeah.
Which is unbelievable.
I think the trend is bad for the Twins, and I'm sure that you realize you're into the analytics stuff at least
sure.
a little bit. You have to be if you're a millennial, and you know it's required by law. And so I'm sure you understand that it really is not about what's going on today. Even it's about the trend. It's a bad trend.
So in terms of a bullpen fix, there are some options. Sam Dyson being designated for assignment by the Rangers. Again, every player that the Rangers let go is going to be considered by the Twins because of the Thad Levine factor. It's just like when Brad Childress was the Vikings coach, every Eagles player that was cast off had to end up in Minnesota. So there's always going to be that line of thinking. And, in fact, the backup catcher, Chris Jimenez, has played for both the Indians and the Rangers. In fact, I believe both of those teams he's played for twice.
Now, did you say Jimenez was a backup catcher?
Well, he is a backup
catcher.
He's a relief pitcher. Well, come on, Brandon.
No, he's a start. He's an actual one of their guys in the bullpen. He's just backup catcher in addition to being part of the bullpen. It's he's one of those two-way players, like all of us back in high school football.
Sure.
Have
you seen the Twins schedule, by the way?
The what?
Have you seen the Twins schedule for the rest of the year? You know, it doesn't get better.
No.
This stretch right here is pretty easy. Maybe is the wrong way to put it for the Twins, but it's nice having Angels, Trout, Seattle, San Francisco, Seattle.
Yeah.
But what I wrote yesterday about Houston. They were facing the Astros like number 7, 8, and 9 starters
really
and still got steamrolled.
Yeah.
I mean, and they started their 1, 2, 3 guys in Santana, Barrios, and Santiago. I mean, it could not have lined up any better.
Well,
that's a painful series loss.
Houston, you look at Houston now, they've got 3 5-tool players. The Twins don't have any. The Twins' best player is a 1-tool player. And it's just how do these teams in any way these teams there's nothing about these teams that's similar at all. Houston is so much better, and they should be because they're probably, as I said, the best team in baseball. But the point is, you look at Houston, and it does give you some insight as to just how bad the Twins really are. They're not a good team.
I think I agree with that.
The question is, and I think this is a little true in the NL Central, although I think. My guess is, you know, it'll be St. Louis and Chicago in the end there. But, I mean, in this division, though, you really can just kind of hang around. I mean, the Indians might just run away with it, but you got to think the Twins could compete with the Tigers, White Sox, and Royals, right?
Well, I would say so, yeah.
Molitor said as much. Yeah, he did. He said there's nothing about any of these other teams that scares him. The Cleveland team anything from Kluber yesterday, notwithstanding. I mean, he's only made 6 or 7 starts. And Danny Salazar has been so bad they've sent him to the bullpen. And they're still virtually tied with the Twins for first place. I don't like the Twins' chances of hanging with that.
No, because in the end, it always comes down to pitching if all other things are in any way similar. And the Twins' pitching is going to get worse. It's the old repeater effect. It's you know, when you start to see the erosion, it doesn't stop. It just becomes the damage is incremental. It gets worse and worse and worse. And what's going to go wrong with Cleveland's pitching? I can't see much of anything.
Going to get better.
That's what's going to happen. And so back to that bullpen point, though.
If you're in charge, are you making fixes with veteran retreads, or do you just start bringing up some of these guys that are a little bit interesting down in the minor leagues, whether it's Trevor Hildenberg or Alan Bucinitz, Mason Malatakis? Randy Rosario is already up. Opposing batters are 4-for-46 against him in the month of May. So I do think there is some intrigue in the minors. Do you look to some of these veteran guys who might have a little bit left in the tank? Do you try the kids out? Do you try a little bit of both?
Yeah.
Or is this just kind of a, you can't patch the ceiling, you're going to ultimately have to replace it eventually?
You always had that intrigue, maybe mystique might be a good word too. You know, it's just like after you've been married for 10 years, you know, that woman next door you never paid any attention to starts to look pretty good.
You're going to get me into so much trouble here.
Well, that was probably, just take it as a reflection upon just, you know, ordinary male cynicism. Not with you. I know you're a happily married guy, even though you're, you know, way too young to be married. And let's face it, you're in it for the long haul. You don't have any options anyway. I would comfort your wife by saying that.
She's wonderful. She just gave birth to our first child, and she's a warrior. So I do got to give her credit for that.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, 17 days ago today, they're out at the pool right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
If I feel better, go join them here in a little bit. But there is a lot of mystique
around
this bullpen.
These are great days for you.
What's that?
I say you've come to understand that these are great days for you.
Oh, yeah, no question about that.
Yeah, that's
There's no
cool.
doubt about that.
But anyway, you know, so I just think that it's once you get to that point, it's just like a game of Russian roulette, you know? I mean, they're all bullets and they all can kill you.
Well, what else haven't we gotten to here before we wrap everything up? I know Miguel Sano hit a home run. Here's a funny story that I didn't report.
Yeah.
I know he had that big burger that he ate on Snapchat that everyone thought he might have gotten sick about. But I was told he brought a live robin into the clubhouse.
Really?
The day of being sick, that he got scratched from the lineup. And he was messing with one of the players' wives about, like, oh, I brought you a gift, whatever. And I'm not saying that made him sick. I guess it was just like it was a bird that was hurt or something, and he was carrying it around.
Really?
I think there's a chance birds can carry the disease that might have made him sick too, which strikes me as strange.
Well, you never know. After all, many millions of people have gotten sick, and it all started with one bird, namely a chicken in the south of China. So it can happen. Also, it's really, you know, and I understand that he's not from around these parts, but that's never okay.
Right.
Just on a serious note, that's just never okay. You know, I don't know. I guess it's typical maybe of Major League Baseball players to think that cruelty to animals is funny, but it kind of makes me sick.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was just him being I don't know what it was, if it was injured and he was just trying to figure out, he brought it in. I don't know what the vibe was, because the guy that told me the story didn't seem to have any kind of angle that it was like he was being mean to it. It was just he was intrigued as a young person. Oh, I see a bird. I don't see birds on the ground all the time. I want to pick it up and look at it. So
yeah.
So I don't think he was being mean to it outright, which makes me feel better about the story.
Well, I hope
but yeah,
so.
It's just odd.
I honestly hadn't heard about the burger. What kind of burger was it?
Well, apparently they had a hamburger contest or something, and he ate this monstrous burger that was on Snapchat, which, again, speaking of millennials, speaking of Miguel Sano also probably being a millennial too. So I don't know. He ate this huge hamburger the day of the game, so he could have had food poisoning. Who even knows at this point?
So back to what Tom said in the beginning, I'm interested in, my take doesn't matter in this one. I'm more interested in how you guys feel about this. Is it a problem when a guy strikes out in almost half of his at-bats?
You want to tackle this first, Brandon?
Well, to this point, no. But that doesn't mean that it's going to stay that way, because we don't know about the sustainability of this approach. Everything we've seen and studied in baseball to this point is people just don't do this. They don't strike out 35% of the time
45.
With a 1,000. Yeah, what I mean, yeah, almost 40% of the time
he's
with a 1,000 OPS.
45% of the time.
We just haven't seen that before. And if it ushers in a new era of player, what they call a three true outcome superstar,
right.
Strikeouts, walks, home runs,
your Adam Dunn's, your Harmon Killebrews. If it ushers in a completely new era of that, then whatever, that's fine.
But Adam Dunn was not a superstar.
Well, no, I mean, he made $17 or $15 million in a season and was a 40 home run guy in Cincinnati where the ball was pretty easy to hit out, I suppose.
And I know when you said 35%, you were talking about his plate appearances. So.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, we don't know that this is sustainable yet. There has not been enough of a time passing with this new approach where we can say, yes, he can continue to do this all season and be an MVP candidate.
Right.
If he can do that, then, roll with it.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you know, then that's fine because obviously the production has been good enough. But the process is questionable. And, you know, if he can keep it up, that's one thing. But I'm not willing to bet on that right now.
You do have to hit an awful lot of home runs to balance out all those whiffs because that at the end of the season, that's, you know, that's going to be 230 or so times when he wasn't able to do so much as advance a runner.
Well, on the positive side of things, the strikeouts seem to be less a reflection of lack of talent, but just a conscious approach to what does and does not matter. And I've had some battles with the idea of productive outs, too, because I believe they exist, but they're not a destination. Because if you go up to the plate saying, all right, I may make an out, but if I make an out, it's going to be to the right side of the infield.
Yeah.
You've closed off half the field. You've closed off about 40% or 50% of the positive outcomes that you can have. That's no way to hit. So I believe productive outs are real. Mm. I believe they happen. I don't believe they should be desired as opposed to going up there and hitting pitches hard. Yeah. For base hits, so that's a new school thing that I probably get into trouble with a lot, but that's just where I'm at.
In terms of my thoughts on this, I mean, obviously you look at his line, and he's nearly a 300 hitter, and is showing power and all that. I think that having seen Trevor Plouffe, who seemed to always double into a double play at the most inopportune time, not that there's ever a time that's great, but you know, I guess a strikeout with people on, you know. On base, to me, doesn't bother me as much as maybe it would other people. And I'm always surprised that there's such drastic, like, differences between players. It just seems like in other sports, there's a more common kind of ground for what makes a good player. Like, you just know...
Uniformity.
Yeah, there's more uniformity. And it's just like you kind of can look at, like, true shooting percentage in the NBA and be like, well, if a guy really can't shoot threes or whatever, it's really going to limit what that player is able to do.
Yeah,
Ricky Rubio.
Right. It is kind of funny in baseball that there's more... it's kind of a fun thing about the game that you can just take all these different approaches that works for certain guys and obviously doesn't for others. I'm not as concerned about it, although this is more of an eyeball thing than looking at the stats. You know, when I see Buxton, he looks lost at times. Like, he just it looks like he's not recognizing the pitches that are thrown at him.
Yeah.
With Sano, I don't see that as much. I see it more as he's kind of cavalier and is like, you know, this is a hard pitch to hit, but I'm just going to take a big whack at it, even if it's not really close to the strike zone.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, even Eddie Rosario, who I think is – you know, kind of shored this up a little bit, although I think decision making in general on the field is kind of an issue for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I would say Rosario's a worse junk ball hitter. He just looks like he, you know, thinks he can hit anything that's remotely near him. And Buxton, it looks like he doesn't recognize the pitches. Snow, it just seems like he's cocky and he just thinks that he can hit like a ball he should probably, you know, just shorten up on and you know, get into the outfield. He thinks he's going to hit that, you know, into St. Paul.
But, and when I look at, for example, Houston's three superstars.
Yeah.
They all understand situational hitting. And that's one of the reasons why they're great players. There is a time. I don't know how it just seems to me intuitive that situational hitting is a good thing. And a guy like Sano comes along and he's not a situational hitter in any sense. I don't know whether he just can't be taught to do it, or they don't bother to try to teach him, or he doesn't bother to try to learn. But, you know, you miss an awful lot of opportunities. It's a difference between being a guy who hits a lot of home runs and being a guy who really can be a real, genuine star player.
You know, you got me thinking about it here that
Eddie Rosario, if you could have him and a love child between him and Robbie Grossman,
yes,
you would probably have the best baseball player
yeah.
in the league. You would have probably Mike Trout, a guy with great discipline, lots of pop, lots of talent, lots of speed, good defense. That sounds like Mike Trout to me. Too bad the Twins have to waste two roster spots and two lineup spots on those two guys.
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, is it just seems like they're designing it as Sano's the anchor. You're going to have someone hit behind him who you hope just kind of holds water. And then it just seems like they're throwing a whole bunch of kind of on-base guys at him, right? Just litter the bases with people. Sano's not going to run into trouble with double plays or whatnot. And it's like either he kind of, you know, scores multiple points when he hits a home run or hits a ball deep in the outfield, or you just go, whatever, the next guy will, you know, bloop one in and, you know, hopefully the guys on base are good base runners. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like that's their strategy.
I would like to see him make some progress.
Oh, for sure.
Scores points, Tom. Do you want to do over on that one? No, I'm kidding. Well, that's pretty much all I have for you guys today. Enjoy your nice warm weekend. Not the first weekend of the summer technically, but it sure feels like it, don't you guys think?
Yeah,
I'm gonna go out in the sun and try to turn my complexion from alabaster to sallow.
Is that even allowed?
It's not even possible for me, but if I could do it, I would.
You don't have shackles tying you to the house, though. You're gonna get out and about.
You know, I'm gonna take a quick walk. I'm gonna put on my sunblock, the 85 sunblock, just in case any stray rays hit me.
You're one of those guys that wears that hat with the bucket hat, aren't you? Ones with the string underneath it, like a Crocodile Dundee or something, aren't you?
Well, and of course, you know, I have to have the workout, the two-piece workout outfit with the stripe down the side.
You're not wearing a romper, like these men's rompers that millennials are wearing?
No. What are they?
Don't ask, don't tell. That's our policy on this one. You can Google it. You can go on the Google machine and then report back. How does that sound next time we have you on?
Well, I think I know how to Google. What was it my man Romney said? He said he knew how to. He was learning how to do a Google, didn't he say? Was it Romney who said that? I think it was Romney who said he was learning how to do a Google.
It's a good thing to know how to do.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's like the pictures of Jeb Bush where he just looks dead inside and he smiles and you just see this despair. And it's like a mechanical brain saying
almost
smile.
Smile like a human. For America, isn't it? But that gets us into another area.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
For Tom Schreier, for Mike Gelfand, I am Brandon Warren. This has been Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.